exploring ideas with innovators, change makers, business leaders, politicians, and activists. This special feature from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is underwritten in part by the Alchemist Brewery of Waterbury and Stowe, committed to a healthy and clean environment, strong communities, and craft beer. AlchemistBeer.com. By Community Capital of Vermont, providing equal access to financing for Vermonters with excellent ideas and the courage and resourcefulness to start and grow small businesses. Green Mountain Power, partnering with customers to create a home, business, and community-based energy system that's clean, reliable, and cost-effective. Let's Grow Kids, a statewide campaign about the need for more high-quality, affordable child care in Vermont to better support our children, families, communities, and economy. And by UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine, as well as nearly 700 BBSR business members who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit. Learn more from www.vbsr.org.
Welcome to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. Today we spend the hour with two women who are speaking out. In the second half hour, we'll be joined by Rebecca Holcomb, the former Secretary of Education under two governors, who will be talking about her concerns about the future of education in Vermont and the current debate over education funding. But in our first half hour, we're joined by Lisa Senecal of Stowe. Last week, she wrote an article for The Daily Beast titled, "The NDA Protected Our Predator. I'm Breaking My Silence Because Women Deserve Better." Lisa Senecal is a co-founder of the Marin Group, which focuses on serving those experiencing discrimination in the workplace and higher education. She's an entrepreneur specializing in communications, media relations, and marketing. In July 2017, Lisa Senecal was appointed to the Vermont Commission on Women by Governor Phil Scott. Lisa Senecal, welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Thank you very much for having me.
Let's begin with the story that you tell in the Daily Beast. What happened to you?
I had been approached in October of 2016 by the president of a company in Stowe, Intopia. Out of the blue, approached, asked what it is I was doing professionally at the time, and I told him, and he said, you know, we're looking for somebody to lead marketing. Would love to have you, you know, hear more about the job. I said, sure. At the time, I was considering switching from being an independent contractor to a full-time position. And so conversations went on for 4 months. After that, there always seemed to be multiple interviews. Went in and interviewed at the company, met the CEO Trevor Crist, and was told a couple of final steps prior to finalizing my hire. But there was always something that delayed that being finalized. It was the bar was always being moved just a little bit. In early February of 2017, the president of the company I'd been interviewing with, Craig DeLuca, misrepresented what his motives were for a private meeting, and that ended up resulting in a very severe incident of sexual harassment.
How did you respond? I mean, it's so shocking when a normal, ordinary workday situation turns abnormal.
It is. It's so difficult to, in the moment, to get your head around what's happening, and afterwards to try to understand what happened and how it happened. It took me a few days to process it. I ended up contacting an attorney, Scott Labby, who I had known for several years, and he occasionally would take cases of sexual harassment or domestic abuse. It's not the main type of legal work that he does, but he was willing to assist me. We contacted the company, And their response was really shocking. I had assumed that the reaction would be, you know, kind of what the standard reaction at a company should be when there's a sexual harassment allegation that comes in. You set the person aside who has had the allegation made against them. You assure the person who's come forward that there's going to be an investigation. Everybody's confidence is kept and a thorough investigation is done. That was not at all what happened in my case. Very quickly after coming forward, I received a response from the company that was nothing short of egregious slut-shaming and held me responsible for everything that happened, said that it was something I had invited, wanted, and that absolutely nothing wrong had occurred.
Who was that letter signed by?
That letter came from their attorney, so it was signed by their New Jersey attorney.
And what did you, how did you respond?
I think the response that they were anticipating was that I would feel the shame that they seemed to believe I should feel. That wasn't my reaction at all. Any lingering hesitation I had about going forward and all that that entailed and how difficult that was going to be was really not an issue after that, and sort of steeled my resolve to make sure that that Craig DeLuca was held to account and that the company behaved responsibly.
Did you interpret them attacking you in their letter as an implicit threat that this is how it was going to go for you if you tried to, if you continued?
Oh, absolutely. That, yeah, I certainly thought that everything they were describing, they intended to make that the argument, and if this went forward, you know, that was, you know, what publicly, if there was a lawsuit, I expected that was what the party line coming from the company was going to be.
You then signed a non-disclosure agreement, an NDA. Why did you sign it, and what, explain what it is?
An NDA, a non-disclosure agreement, is often a component of sexual harassment settlements. At least it is now. Originally, NDAs were a legal instrument that were created to protect company trade secrets and intellectual property. They weren't intended to be used to cover up inappropriate conduct. But that's how they're used now. And we went through about a 2.5 month process before we got to the point of settlement. I had been assured multiple times that thorough investigations had been done. We were able to show in our response to that original letter that there were many very easily provable factual inaccuracies, which I believe, in addition to some internal conversations that they had, led them to believe that Craig DeLuca was not telling them the truth about what had happened. Finally, they came around to the idea that it wasn't appropriate to keep him on as the president of the company, and that became a requirement in the settlement agreement, and that he not be allowed to be rehired in any capacity, either by Intopia or other affiliated companies. And after I'd received all those assurances and also told that even during the process for our negotiations, he was no longer allowed to be alone with women either within the office or off campus. So with all those assurances, we reached a settlement agreement, and I felt as though it was safe to enter into a non-disclosure, which in a lot of cases there's a value to both parties. I mean, it's a very sensitive, difficult situation for usually the woman, but the person who's brought forward the complaint, and that confidentiality can be really important. When non-disclosures go terribly wrong is when people have been misled, thorough investigations haven't been done, and the person turns out to be a serial perpetrator, which was the case.
And, of course, not NDAs have been the main instrument that enabled Harvey Weinstein and others to continue for decades doing what they did. Why are you speaking out now?
There are a couple of different reasons. In October of 2017, I was contacted out of the blue by another woman who lives in Stowe. Never met her before. I received a Facebook message saying that she had been given my name. It had come through a friend, but it originally come from an employee at Intopia, who identified me as a person who had had a sexual harassment claim against Craig DeLuca. And she disclosed to me that he had done something to her as well. So I was, shocked, disappointed, upset that I felt as though I had been misled and I was now unintentionally part of a cover-up that had allowed this to continue, had allowed him now to move on after leaving the company with no disclosure whatsoever that this was something that he engages in. So I couldn't tell her what happened, but listened to her story, and the pattern was so obvious, the language that was used, the approaching her out of the blue for a job, the delay in finalizing things. It was just clearly so many things overlapped, including the period of time, because what had happened to her and then his subsequent continuing harassment of her overlapped with the period when I had been harassed by him. Where were we going with this?
We were just talking about why you decided to speak out now.
So,
and we should point out you do this at great personal risk. An NDA is a legal instrument that specifically bars you from speaking about it.
Yeah. It does. Fortunately, it bars both parties who are signatories to the agreement. And prior to me coming forward, the company on multiple occasions had already violated the NDA. I don't know. They certainly have the legal right to file suit against me. That would lead to me filing a countersuit, and then we can go down that road and allow the court system to determine what the value of my silence was in light of their actions. But in addition to learning about Allison, she did decide to move forward and file a lawsuit, which happened a couple of weeks ago in Lamoille County Court. So her name was now public, as was Craig DeLuca's and Intopia and Trevor Chris. So stories were done. Comments were given by both Trevor Christ and Craig DeLuca.
The heads of Intopia.
Yes. Craig DeLuca completely denied that any of the allegations were true. The lawsuit included a reference to another job applicant who had been harassed by him. When Trevor came forward with his comments, he insisted that even prior to Me Too, the company had done everything appropriately when it came to training and response to sexual harassment allegations. And not only were they right on those issues, but at every other issue of concern to women, Intopia had always done everything right. And I knew that wasn't the case. And essentially both Allison and, though I hadn't been named, I were being called liars. And I wasn't going to leave her hanging out there, and I certainly wasn't going to allow that to be said about me and have my integrity questioned.
You're listening to the Vermont Conversation. We're speaking in this half hour with Lisa Senecal of Stowe. Her article entitled, "The NDA Protected Our Predator, I'm Breaking My Silence Because Women Deserve Better," appeared in the last week in the Daily Beast, and we'll link to it on thevermontconversation.com. You've been writing about sexual harassment at work in a story that you did, another one called "We Have to Stop Blaming Women for Harassment at Work." You wrote, "There are millions of women in small towns across the country who face similar situations, pressures, and choices, and whose communities are put to the test by their responses to these women." What has been your community's response to hearing this news?
Directly to me, I have been overwhelmed by the positive response that I've received from friends and other members in my community. People I only knew tangentially, people I didn't know at all, and also close friends. And for a lot of people in a small town, that's incredibly difficult because people have mutual friends. And all of our lives overlap to a very great degree when, you know, you live in a community of 2,500 year-round residents. People have taken, it's a bit of a personal risk for everyone who decides to come forward and speak publicly. There are certainly, there's always going to be the quiet murmurings in the background, and some of that gets back to me, and people are going to say what they're going to say. I just have to focus on the fact that I know that what I'm saying is true and what I'm doing is right, and it's an important step for me to be taking.
In between when the original incidents happened at the beginning of 2017 and now, when you're speaking out publicly and breaking your NDA, the Me Too movement happened. It was really not very long ago. It was just last fall that the Harvey Weinstein stories broke in The New Yorker and The New York Times and everything that followed from it. How has the Me Too movement been a part of your experience and your choices that you're making now?
It has been very interesting to watch and read and listen to the various people who have come forward, the stories that have come out. To see the different responses that happen. Clearly, there's a pattern that's emerged of two different responses that companies have when allegations are brought forward. There's sort of the Bill O'Reilly model where everything is denied, settlements are paid, and non-disclosures are signed, and everything is hushed up, and it continues for a while until it blows up, and Bill O'Reilly ends up without a job, and the organization he's with is tarnished. The other alternative is the way Matt Lauer was handled, that immediately action was taken. His co-host was told the morning that she found out that she was going to have to go on the air and announce the allegations against him, and that he had been put on leave. And because of that, that company moved forward with a great deal of praise for the way that they had handled the situation so responsibly and been respectful of the women. So the Me Too movement's allowed me to certainly watch a lot of these examples play out and see what seems to work and what doesn't work in the different ways that women are treated. I think globally it has, it's opened a lot of eyes to the, just the magnitude of this problem and how deep it is. And that it, I think we're beginning to see now, and I hope coming forward it helps to further the conversation, that this isn't a Hollywood problem, it's not a New York problem, it's not a DC problem. This is happening, those are the stories we hear about because those are big name people, and that's where the media tends to go. But this happens all the time to women, and there's nothing unique about Stowe. It's no more unique than it is that it happens in New York. This happens in every town, in every state across the country.
What do you hope will happen as a result of your decision to speak out? And one question within that is, you mentioned before that you think that NDAs have their place. Many people are saying now that NDAs should be done away with in cases of sexual harassment, sexual assault. Do you share that view?
I have very mixed feelings about it. I still believe there are circumstances when NDAs are appropriate. What I don't think is appropriate is when they're used as a means to cover up serial behavior. And one of the things in the sexual harassment legislation that I worked on, Representative Copeland Hanza sponsored this year, and the governor signed and goes into effect July 1st. One of the points that was discussed a lot in committee and in first drafting the bill was what to do about NDAs. And that's been set aside, but is required in the law to be taken up again in the next legislative session to try to figure out how to address the serial harassment issue, and hopefully figuring out a responsible way to create some whistleblower protection for people who are under NDAs and then discovering they're in the sort of situation that I am, that you sign the NDA believing that one set of circumstances is true, and then finding out that that's not the case and there are other survivors out there. And, you know, under those circumstances, silence absolutely cannot be allowed to continue.
Would you encourage other women in your situation who have signed NDAs to break those NDAs now and do as you've done?
I think that is a completely personal decision that every person has to make for themselves. Circumstances are so different for different people. I'm in a situation that I felt I could take the risk. There are a lot of people who aren't able to do that. And one of the things I hope doesn't come out of my coming forward and, you know, speaking in spite of the NDA is for women who don't feel that they can do that, to feel as though this is something that they should be doing that they're not doing. No survivor owes anyone their story. And that has to be a very personal decision. So certainly if people feel they can do that, I think that's important to do. But it really has to be on a case-by-case basis.
Lisa Senecal, what is the role that you would like to see men play in this movement?
There's a great organization called A Call to Men that I've really become interested in following their work closely. And Tony Porter, who's one of the two founders of the organization, likes to say if women could stop domestic abuse, if women could stop sexual harassment, they would have done so already. So this isn't something women can do by themselves. Men need to be allies. And they're very often in a more financially secure, more secure in their employment position than women are. And they need to speak up. They need to call out bad behavior. They need to not be bystanders. They need to be willing to get involved. And it's also a risk for them, but this risk can't be borne by women alone in coming forward, or this will continue to happen. So I hope men will feel, I hope they'll be more self-reflective. And I certainly talked to a lot of really good men who've done some difficult soul searching about behavior in the past. They wonder if they've crossed lines and made people feel uncomfortable when they didn't intend to. My reaction to that always is, if you're having that internal dialogue, then you're not one of the people I worry about. You know, that's a good thing. If you feel uncomfortable about something you've done in the past, that means you already recognize that it's wrong and you're not going to continue doing it. It's the people who don't begin to understand. So the men who do, they need to be pointing it out to the men who don't and holding them responsible for their behavior.
You have turned outrage into action in a variety of ways. You mentioned you had you were very involved in passing new laws about sexual harassment in the Vermont legislature. You have founded a company, the Marin Group, where you're aiding other women. As you're talking about your own experience now and writing about it, is it different for you? Is it harder to talk about what you've done rather than the more generic what others have done?
It is. I can maintain composure if I keep this on a very intellectual level, talking about the big picture issues. That's a lot more. It's a lot easier for me to do. Having to go back to where I was when this happened, obviously, is a lot more difficult. But I think it's given me a perspective in both working with women and we also work with companies to go in and do risk assessments and show them where, you know, red flags are and things that need to be addressed so they don't end up in a situation like Intopia did, finding out that this was happening in the company and trying to stop it before it starts.
Okay. Well, Lisa Senecal, I want to thank you for joining us this week on the Vermont Conversation.
Thank you very much for having me.
And for telling a difficult story.
Thank you.
Lisa Senecal is the author of a new piece in the Daily Beast called The NDA Protected Our Predator, I'm Breaking My Silence Because Women Deserve Better. And we'll link to it on thevermontconversation.com. We're going to take a short break for the news. And after that, we'll be joined by former Secretary of Education, Rebecca Holcomb. Stay tuned.